This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
A lot of people, the weather does provide a level of joy. Count me among them. And joining us every Monday in studio, Lenny McAllister, our resident political analyst, who also wears many hats, one in a very important one in education, which is really one of the big topics, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Education
from the federal level is now being dismantled. The Education Department with Linda McMahon, who was married to Vince McMahon. She's one of the founders of the WWE. Of course, her father-in-law, the late Vince McMahon Sr., started it all. But that has nothing to do with her and Trump's first administration being head of the Small Business Administration and now the head of the Education Department with a dictate to basically move yourself out of a job.
It's going to be interesting because you have all these things going on at once. Now, yeah, you lined it up in regards to the Department of Education. You also have the Supreme Court decision that came out that halted the frozen funds, and the swing vote was Amy Coney Barrett, who's being attacked by the MAGA movement now for voting against these funds staying frozen. Now you also have a continuing resolution coming up where there's an opportunity in negotiations to say, okay, we're going to keep the government funded, but we're going to cut some of the money, and it could include funding that was going to the Department of Education. It's going to be interesting to see that we see all the rhetoric out there, but we also see some backsteps by this Trump administration with what they've been trying to do since January. The CR, the latest Supreme Court decisions, all of this will show what they're going to actually be able to do and perhaps be able to cut over the next 6 months versus the rhetoric that we're hearing, because it's really where the money lays. That's where the decision ends up being. Where does your money lay?
Do you think states, because the president has said, I want to leave education up to the states, do you think states embrace that overall, or how much money is linked from the federal government that trickles down to the states for education that won't be there anymore, potentially?
It's going to be a back and forth, because in one regard, do states want the autonomy for education? Absolutely. That they do not want the additional regulations that do come from the federal government. At the same exact time, when there's a catastrophe, COVID, every school district in the United States of America and private schools looked to the federal government and said, we need emergency money. And they were flooded with billions of dollars, a lot of which has yet to be spent, has to be forfeited back to the federal government. When it comes to special needs, there's a level of civil rights protection that may or may not come from the states. If you have a state that doesn't have a whole lot of funding and you're mandated by federal protections to provide for kids that have special needs when it comes to learning disabilities or physical disabilities, that stuff is federally protected and enforced. If that goes away, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, hey, I'm used to my kid that, you know, is in a wheelchair having access to the public school, and the public school in a state may say, we just don't have the money to redo that ramp. Therefore, your kid's going to have to go to school at home. Well, I want my kid to be socialized. We don't have the money for it. That's where the gap with the lack of enforcement from the federal government comes into play. And people may say a state would never do that, but it's in a lot of people's lifetimes where states made a lot of curious decisions when it came to education.
To be continued. That said, some other agencies have been under scrutiny. One of those is NOAA. N-O-A-A, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. And part of that's the National Weather Service. This is, and many of these jobs are scientifically based. And then the other biggie is U.S. health agencies being asked or offered a $25,000 buyout. Most of the 80,000 federal workers responsible for researching diseases, inspecting food, administering Medicare and Medicaid are being offered a $25,000 buyout. I'm curious how many will take it. $25,000 sounds like a lot of money in one chunk, and it is, but it's not going to last them.
And it's not security. And I think that Americans need to understand that protections against natural catastrophes and protection against disease and, I hate to say it on a Monday morning, but biological warfare, those are national sovereignty issues. Your people cannot be contributing and successful in keeping the United States safe and prosperous if they're constantly fighting off or recovering from floods or hurricanes or tornadoes, or as we saw in the West earlier this year, fires. And just the same, if you're at risk of people threatening the United States with unintentional or intentional biological attacks, I'll call it attacks in an air quote, you have to have something in place that keeps your people safe. And I'm sorry, people seem to forget that biological warfare, this is something that had been studied for decades by many nations. And there is an obligation of the government to keep us safe from that type of attack. So when you're looking at cutting those jobs and you just see it as bureaucratic bloat, it kind of goes back to what Donald Trump said. There needs to be a pivot away from of cutting government down with a hatchet and more with a scalpel, which people have been okay with going after waste, fraud, and abuse, but you can't be vulnerable in the process of that because other countries are not going to stop what they're doing just because we do what we do here in the United States.
Well, those 80,000 federal workers, again, under the Health Administration, have until 5 p.m. Friday to submit a response. We'll see. More to come with Lenny McAllister and the Big K Morning Show. Big K Morning Show, we continue our conversation with Lenny McAllister. It'll be interesting to see what happens in this mayoral race in Pittsburgh. For all intents and purposes, the winner of the primary is the de facto winner in this city based on the historical, you know, accounts of going back to a Republican mayor when?
1932.
Yes, 1932. That's pretty remarkable, actually. So that's unlikely to change, which means incumbent Ed Gainey and Corey O'Connor, who is now the Allegheny County Comptroller, whoever wins the primary is going to be the mayor.
Yeah.
Or will continue to be the mayor. But it looks like Corey O'Connor's gained a lot of momentum and raised a ton of money.
And with the vote from the Democratic Committee, this is where, and not to, you know, talk bad of anybody, but the average everyday Pittsburgher looks at them as the muckety-mucks. They're the insiders. They're the people that don't really understand me. And so there's two sentiments going on. If you look at what happened over the weekend, it was a close race between who got the endorsement. but it's an endorsement. Papers, the paper endorsement used to mean a big deal around the nation about 30, 40 years ago. Not as much anymore because of the influence of social media and activists. Just the same, there's going to be a sentiment from that committee, and then there's going to be the everyday Pittsburgher that's going to hit a pothole on their way to work. They're going to remember that when it snowed last month, my street wasn't plowed for the seventh or eighth time this winter. They're going to read reports in regards to jobs or downtown or a shooting in downtown about a month ago, and their dissatisfaction, the whole situation with the police chief, and understanding how many police chiefs have we had over the last 4 years. That's different than a bunch of insiders picking who do we like more out of two politicians we've known for at least a decade. And I think that over the next month or so, those two guys are going to have to really connect less with the insider and more with the person that feels too much like an outsider.
So it's only weeks away now. I mean, when you think about a couple of months here, and it's going to be decided. I mean, again, for all intents and purposes, the primary is the election when the Democrat, and it'll be interesting. We're going to talk to the mayor about that, among other things, because to your point, the incumbent, regardless of what actually is happening, typically all the things you just listed, you just say, yeah, it's your fault.
Yep. You got to be able to hang your hat on something. And I think the issue that the incumbent has is what do you hang your hat on that you feel good about? That other people will shake their head and be like, yes. That even your opponent will say, well, that's true. You want them to be able to say, well, that's true. Well, yeah, that's true too. Well, yeah, the unemployment did come down. And yeah, you know what? People are feeling more confident in spending money in downtown Pittsburgh these days. You want the opponent to at least acquiesce on some things that improved. If the perception, and again, as you well know, Larry, politics is often about perception and optics. If you can't shape that successfully, no one's going to look at the statistics. They're only going to go by how they feel. When you vote for an executive, president, governor, mayor, you vote for people that make you feel good and give you confidence less than you do about the statistics and what the objective reality may be.
I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, but Corey O'Connor has gained a lot of momentum, and apparently the endorsement of the Democratic committee, there's a little caveat to that, and Paul Rasmussen will have more on that at the bottom of this half hour. That said, when will people start be paying attention to the midterm elections? When does that kick in? Next year?
I would think that probably in the fall. Probably around, because if you think about it, if they pass the continuing resolution out of Capitol Hill, if it goes through successfully without a hitch, you still got to come back and do this at the end of the fiscal year, which is in the fall. That's when you'll start hearing more and more candidates announcing races to go after people in vulnerable Republican seats. That's when people will really start counting the seats and saying, hey, you know, this seat should flip, this seat should flip. If all these things play out, the House either stays with the Republicans or goes to the Democrats. These are the vulnerable U.S. Senate seats that are also out there. And then there's still what happened internationally when it came to foreign affairs. What's going on with these trade wars? Did the tariffs ever get applied? Did they get rolled back? Did we get a new trade deal with Mexico and Canada? Has that settled down? What does it look like in Europe now? These are things that will impact the different houses. Again, foreign affairs, people will look at the Senate and say, well, you confirmed Marco Rubio. You confirmed Hegseth. Look at what's going on now. You got to go if they're in a vulnerable seat.
Lenny McAllister on the Big K Morning Show. More to come. I have some questions about other areas and cuts. And what about this riff between Elon Musk? They did a parody of it on Saturday Night Live. Did you see it?
I didn't get a chance to see it.
It was actually pretty funny. Interested to hear what United States Congressman Mark Kelly has to say about that. And the president wanting to...
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. 5 times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
To share the details of the investigation of that assassination attempt and the other one that occurred while he was playing golf in Florida. Yep. And he was playing golf in Mar-a-Lago yesterday, and they had to scramble some fighter jets because an aircraft had violated the airspace. And then over the weekend, the president was in Mar-a-Lago. He wasn't at the White House, but the shooting, a suspect was shot outside of the White House. Not exactly sure of the details.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And for those folks that have a twisted perspective on that playing out, that's the worst case scenario. You do not want any elected official, much less the President of the United States, to be assassinated or to be shot at again or shot. The level of divisiveness and mistrust that would circulate around the country if that actually played out or went down again, I don't know if our country would recover from that very quickly. Our reaction in the summer from most corners was commendable. I don't know if we would react the same way now. And I don't want to risk that. I'm sorry. For those of you that might say that, you know, well, Trump brought this on himself. Politicians make decisions that we don't like all the time. We have a democracy that is supposed to have decorum for a reason. And, I don't like hearing these type of stories at all, ever.
That said, we'll get more details, but a lot happened over the weekend, and including in Canada. Now, suddenly, we're at odds with Canada because of the tariffs and a potential trade war. And Canadians' leading Liberal Party has chosen a central bank leader, Mark Carney, to replace the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who resigned in January. Transition comes with threats of takeover of Canada by tariffs. Trudeau recently accused Trump of planning, quote, a total collapse of the Canadian economy because that will make it easier to annex us. They're taking the potential of annexation serious there. CBS is Ed O'Keefe in Ottawa.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau saying goodbye to his party and hitting back hard at Trump.
We will continue to be in a trade war that was launched by the United States for the foreseeable future. So Canadians should continue to buy Canadian, continue to stand up for each other.
Trudeau is being succeeded by Mark Carney, an economist and former head of Canada's central bank, who's set to take power in the coming days and inherit a tariff war involving hundreds of billions of dollars in trade.
And Mark Carney quoted as saying they're ready to fight, literally, like they do in hockey. So you know that's going to get a lot of play.
And he put the dig out there that, like in hockey, Canada will win. That was one of the things he ended his speech with.
Right. And based on this recent match that they set up, in lieu of having an All-Star weekend, they did 2 weeks, and they're going to have
the Four Nations.
Yeah,
yes.
The Four Nations hockey tournament that Canada did win after the U.S. beat them in the first game. In the final, it was a Canadian victory. And
in overtime, right?
And there were fights.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
If you remember in the first game in particular.
Pretty much immediately.
Right out of the gate. So there's some bad blood brewing with Canada and elected officials.
They know that when you match up the two economies, Larry, that the United States obviously has a bigger economy, bigger everything. But when you feel that your very existence is at stake, there's a level of fight that's going to come out that I don't think that the average American, particularly the average American serving in the Trump administration, really expected Canada to have. And it's when you have that level of fight, it stays, it sustains. It's akin to, not the same, because it's not a military war, but it's akin to what you see with Ukraine and Russia. The Russians should have beat the Ukrainians within a very short period of time. That war has now been going on for 3 years, because when you are fighting for your very existence, there's that extra gear, that extra energy, that extra fight you're willing to put into something. And the Canadians are not looking at this as a renegotiated business deal. They're looking at it as a threat to their national sovereignty. You're hearing elected officials repeatedly say that. And once you bring it to that level, it's truly game on, even though the economy of Canada is much smaller than what we have. And their share of the global economy is nowhere near ours.
And that said, what's happening today, Secretary of State Marco Rubio on his way to Saudi Arabia. He'll participate in discussions about the war between Russia and Ukraine. President Zelensky of Ukraine scheduled to travel to Saudi Arabia to be a part of it. He's asked to be a part of any negotiations to settle a war between his country and Russia, which is fair.
And expected.
Yeah, he would want to be. And that said, the president's scheduled to hold a roundtable with technology CEO Council, and there'll be a new director, we presume. He'll swear in the United States Secret Service director, who was an agent and someone who served him, with him, you know, was attached to him in between his first administration and this one. So that's kind of what's going on today. But the clock is ticking on a economic government shutdown by the end of the week.
Yeah, and with that, again, are they going to just pass a clean continuing resolution? Are they going to try to put some of the Doge cuts that we've been seeing and slide it into these negotiations? How much will Democrats acquiesce in the House? And then, of course, you're going to have to get to 60 votes in the Senate. So you're going to have some Democrats go along with this. Now, this might be, and it's interesting, because the Democrats missed the opportunity last week with the State of the Union address / joint address of Congress. They should have been gearing up for this with that moment and using that moment as the beginning of the negotiations for what has to happen this week. They missed that moment. Let's see if they take advantage of it now and get some things in the CR that they're going to be fighting for, that they can go back to the American people and say, look, we're pushing back on what's coming out of the Trump administration, and this is why you need to give us control of the House of Representatives.
Big K Morning Show, Larry Richard, and our Monday appointment listening guest, Lenny McAllister. I wanted to share with everybody, Lenny, and I want to thank Paul Rasmussen. So incoming Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said that President Trump imposed unjustified tariffs on what Canada builds and sells. So here's what he had to say.
We didn't ask for this fight, but Canadians are always ready when someone else drops the gloves. So the Americans, they should make no mistake, in trade as in hockey, Canada will win.
So that's, you know, the gloves are off, so to speak, in this case, literally.
Yeah.
You got a new prime minister coming in, potentially, all indications are. So that's where we are.
And he's going to come in with a level of political capital that the Trump administration does not come in with. And it's not because Donald Trump's not a new president. Obviously, he was newly inaugurated on January 20th. But again, he's unique because he's already been president. So you don't come in with the wind in your sails quite the same exact way you would if you were newly inaugurated like he did in 2017. Whereas this new prime minister is going to come in, and not only is he going to have a certain level of a honeymoon period because he's brand new, but now he's coming in with a rallied Canada, that's additional wind in his sails. He's going to be able to do some things a little differently, make some mistakes, but also be a little bit more aggressive for some successes that the Trump administration simply can't do right now.
Lenny, some people might suggest, okay, we get it with China in particular, or dealing with any other country, maybe Mexico too, because of the border issues and the drugs that have penetrated from the South. That's not the case with the North. Canada has been a reliable and very close ally. Why pick on them?
Because they're trying to, twofold. Number one, they're trying to renegotiate a deal that just happened about seven years ago, the USMCA. The second thing is they're trying to dismantle the USMCA in the sense that they're trying to bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States, which is a lot bigger of a ball of yarn to untangle than people want to think. A lot of our car parts, for example, are in both Canada and Mexico. You're not making a car out of the Midwest. You're making it across two borders, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And in order to bring those jobs back home, which, by the way, that's the Trump union voter, the person that works at the plants, not necessarily the people that are running the unions or that are the executives of the plants. In order to bring those jobs back for that voter, you have to dismantle certain core fundamental things about the agreement. That's going to take a lot longer than just a bunch of tariffs and hoping for the best. And that's what we're starting to learn right now. It's a ball of yarn that has been tangled up, intermingled for three decades now, and it's going to have to be taken apart slowly if you really want that manufacturing base to come back. And it's going to take states lowering their tax base and having certain deals for those manufacturers to come back to the states, because that's not going to just be a federal policy.
Lenny McAllister, always good to talk.
Always good to be here.
Share Monday morning with you. Enjoy the great weather this week. Seize the day.
Absolutely. No shoveling anymore. No shoveling of snow.
I wouldn't go that far. Not this week. It ain't over yet. All right, Lenny, thank you.
God bless.